Before we get started, I just wanted to thank you guys for coming back for another episode of The Places You'll Go. If you enjoy the podcast and want to get involved in the community or take a guess at our weekly photo teasers, like and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at ThePlacesYG. If you have your own amazing stories to tell us, feedback about the show, or ideas for upcoming episodes, feel free to email us at theplacesyg@gmail.com or visit anchor.fm/theplacesyg to leave us a text or voice message. Finally, if you want more people to find out about how awesome this show is, follow us on Spotify and Overcast and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Now, without further ado, enjoy this week's episode.
This is a Wandering Hippies production.
So we made it back for another week, but listen, fuck math.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so pissed. I got my first B ever I've ever gotten in college, and I'm not happy, but it's totally fine. I'm cool. It's fine. Doesn't matter.
He's not fine, guys.
It doesn't matter.
I don't know if I'm going to survive math.
I'm an angry boy. Math makes me angry. It's stupid. It doesn't make sense. Math with real numbers is fine. I got that. I can figure that out. No problem. Math with letters. If you, anybody out there who's not a math teacher or like a physicist or something ridiculous like that, if you can tell me the last time that you had to factor a polynomial equation, then I will never say that math is stupid again. But I will say you'll never need any of these things. And it's a waste of my time to be taking the class. But here we are. Anyway.
He's doing great.
We just finished off our week with Callie. And it was something.
It was. We went to Meow Wolf.
Yeah, we got to do some fun things.
If you guys are ever in the Denver area, check out Meow Wolf. It is amazing art. It's an immersive experience. And it's an experience.
Yeah. And it was a lot of fun. And we made another trip to Idaho Springs. So, you know, we talk about that a lot. We talked about that on an episode of this. And we go there a lot because we love Idaho Springs.
Someday we'll probably live there.
That's kind of a goal. There or just outside of there. But anyway, we're going to head back to the Eastern Seaboard for this week. So, that's Lakin.
And that's Chance.
And these are the places you'll go. The places you'll go. So this week, we are knocking out the first state to become a state with an adventure in the heart of Delaware.
Funny, because we're like towards the end of the states.
I know. We did it like almost towards the last.
No offense to you, Delaware.
No.
You're spelled dumb. I don't like it.
Yeah, it's pretty silly. You're the sixth least populous state in the country.
Oh.
But with the fifth highest population density. If that tells you anything about it. Not a lot of people, but they're packed in a pretty tight area.
Ugh. That's how I feel. Well, we have a lot of people here.
Yeah.
And we're also packed.
Population density is pretty tight in the metro area here, but it's Colorado in general isn't that dense.
No. We have a year, less than a year, for our lease to be over.
And we're getting out of this apartment. It's okay. It's a nice little place to call home for now.
Our neighbor brought us cookies again.
He's the best. Jim's awesome.
He's the best. And they're the best cookies I've
ever
had.
They're literally like almost like scones with raisins in them. And they're fucking amazing.
I don't even like raisins.
I do.
And it's amazing.
It was a great little breakfast item this morning. And I'll probably have it for breakfast again tomorrow.
Good coffee dipper.
Indeed. So, the city that we're going in Delaware specifically is Milford, which sets in the coastal plains, but don't let that fool you. This is truly beautiful country with open wooded areas all around and a lot of things to do. Historically, the Lenape people called the area home, and we kind of touched on them before, as they're now known as the Delaware Nation in Oklahoma, but originally Lenape was a term which meant the original people or genuine people, something along those lines. They were some of the first who contacted the Dutch on what is now known as Long Island. They had a very complex understanding of kinship, which made it very difficult for treaties to be established and settled between them and the Europeans. Because oftentimes the Europeans would, you know, strike up a treaty, and then a clan group would be upset that they weren't recognized in it because they were related to one of the other groups, but the Europeans didn't understand how the Lenape understood relationships. Familial relationships.
Of course.
Yeah. Despite that, they were an incredibly powerful people during most of the beaver trade, they were an incredibly powerful people controlling most of the beaver trade in the region, and as such, they became an issue for many of the European powers vying for power in the New World. The French eventually armed the Algonquin in hopes of pushing the Iroquois out of the fertile trapping grounds around the St. Lawrence River. This conflict was known as the Beaver Wars, and that caused other powers in the region to fear arming indigenous peoples with European weapons. So the British and the Dutch made sure that the Lenape didn't get access to firearms. For that reason, that led to the Lenape being eventually subjugated by the Susquehannock Nation and becoming basically a slave state because they didn't have the weapons to defend themselves, European weapons that the Susquehannock had. And we remember,
yeah.
I mentioned this a little bit in the episode on Lancaster.
Mm-hmm.
Smallpox eventually ravaged the Lenape, but the safety of their people was afforded by William Penn in the Pennsylvania colony.
Is he a Quaker?
Yes,
okay.
And we mentioned that again in the Lancaster episode where William Penn was very adamant that native peoples be allowed to retain their lands and live on their lands, and he really didn't see the land grant given to him by the king as something that meant that he was able to take native lands. He basically saw it as, well, I get all the lands that they are not using.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But again, as we've mentioned before, his kids did not have the same kind heart that William Penn had.
That's not the Quaker way, bros.
Well, to them it was, I suppose. They eventually began selling off all the land that Penn had promised to the native peoples. Eventually, the Lenape were forced further west into the Indian territories, now known as Indiana, and then Wisconsin, and finally Oklahoma. And that's where the Delaware Nation is now.
Jesus.
And they are a federally recognized tribe with about 16,000 members today.
Oh, that's good. Oh, fuck, man. Oklahoma.
Really?
I'm sorry. Have we gone to Oklahoma yet?
No.
That's the 50th one
I've been,
state.
That's another one I've been putting off. Oklahoma and Nebraska. We haven't done either. Or Kansas. We haven't done any of those right down the middle.
There.
No, nothing goes on there. Sorry, guys. I know none of you listen yet. Eventually, you might when I do an episode near you. And then you're going to be like, this motherfucker talks shit about Oklahoma. You listen.
The entire time.
Your states are horrible to drive through. Do something about that. Plant some trees along the road or something. Like
Oklahoma at least has, like, a mountain.
Mm-hmm. It actually was pretty nice driving through eastern Oklahoma.
Like, during the day, it's not bad, but we always happened to hit it when it was, like, foggy, and I was always driving through the mountain, and it was raining, and everyone wants to go 90.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, because I don't know the mountain.
In Kansas and Nebraska. Nebraska, I actually can somewhat appreciate driving through Nebraska, at least on Interstate 80, because at least you get to see, like, the North Platte River.
Oh, yes. So exciting.
Which is something. It's some scenery. There's trees, at least. But Kansas is just, like...
flat.
Here's I-70. You get to see nothing.
Fields, oil, rigs.
And you're going to have to keep your wheel turned to the right the entire time. To fight the crosswind on the interstate. Godspeed.
Your arm is going to hurt.
But this episode isn't about them.
Sorry.
We're moving on.
We're on the East Coast.
We'll talk shit about you guys when we get there. So.
No, we're not talking shit about the habitants of them.
No. No, yeah. We'll talk shit about your states when we get there.
You can talk shit about Iowa.
Right.
You have no room to talk about Colorado, though.
I'll talk shit about Iowa.
Oh, me too. Anyway. Anywhoozle.
Anyway. The area that would eventually become Milford was established as an English colonial city in 1680 on the side that sets in Kent County by Henry Bowman. And then the rest of the city came about as a growth off of the plantation of Joseph Oliver, which was on the Sussex County side.
That's your great, 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 great.
Great, no relation that I'm aware of. The first Oliver we tracked came to Virginia. In the 1600s.
Oh, okay.
Slave owner. Checks
yeah.
out.
Yeah, I totally get it. Yeah. My family was too. We're all pieces of garbage here.
You're right.
But breaking generational curses. Hey. Hopefully.
Anyway, the Milford shipyards that eventually were established in the city became some of the most productive in the country. They were wildly popular during the Spanish-American War. They were reauthorized in World War I and World War II to build. World War I, they built some big ships, some large destroyers, and then in World War II, they mainly built submarine chasers. But those did eventually become obsolete, and Milford transitioned into being a center of commerce for the agricultural center of Delaware, as well as kind of leaning into the tourist side of things. It's not quite as touristy as some Delaware cities, one's closer to the coast, but there's still a lot to do in Milford. And you, listen, guys, truth be told, this episode is going to cover Delaware in general. Nothing against Delaware, but your state is small.
Very small.
I can only do so many episodes in a state that is the size of a county in Colorado. And it's just like, we'll do what we can, you know, but...
You're the first state. You're getting all the credit.
Okay? Right. Right. So, this Milford episode is basically going to cover a lot of Delaware. We're going to probably discuss Dover a little bit. We're going to discuss further south. We're doing the best we can. We may come back someday to a rural reach of Delaware, but in truth, we had enough trouble coming up with stories for the... encompassing most of the state, that it's going to be hard pressed for us to come back. But Milford is a great jumping off point. It's very centrally located in Delaware.
Beautiful.
It's beautiful there. It's a great place to base your adventures along the East Coast. You're going to be far enough away from some of the major metropolitan areas like Wilmington and Baltimore that you're going to feel like you're in a quiet farming community, secluded, and still only be an hour from any major things to do, you know. So, when we do go and visit Delaware, visit Milford, where are we going to stay at?
Milford Brimley.
Milford Brimley. Diabetes.
Diabetes. We're going to stay at the Tower Bed and Breakfast. Located in historic Milford on the Mispillion River, this beautiful pink building was built in 1783 and remodeled in 1891 to a steamboat Gothic style. And let me tell you guys, gorge.
Nice.
Gorgeous.
Nice.
I would live in it.
Very nice.
I want a cottage, but it's pink and it's Gothic. It's really cute.
Okay.
This was once the home of Delaware's most famous poet, and home to William Burton, the governor of Delaware during the Civil War. Each guest room is very spacious and has all the modern amenities, including Netflix. There is a large music room and a parlor that is open for guests, pleasure year round.
Okay.
There's a private
room.
Oh, no.
Oh, no?
No, sir.
Sorry.
Sorry to you. I don't know what you had plans for, but it's open to all guests.
Oh.
Yeah.
So not a group pleasure room?
Oh my god. Anyway. There's a private garden where you are welcome to relax in, and you can smoke or vape, because that is not allowed in the building, of course. Why isn't vaping allowed in the buildings?
Because people are scared of secondhand vaping, because we don't really know much about it.
Okay. All right. It doesn't have like a residual smell. Anyway.
it's really the effects of what the secondhand smoke would be, and we just don't know enough about it to say it's safe.
They have a gourmet breakfast, which is provided daily in the summer months. You can catch breakfast in the garden sunroom. And then during the winter, breakfast is served in the formal dining room with a fireplace.
Hey.
They also have off-street parking, which is a definite bonus in this area. So go and check that place out.
In the east in general.
Yeah.
In the east, not on the east.
And you don't have to pay for it.
Right. That's nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot of recreational opportunities. I feel like I say that every episode, but it's true. If you try hard enough, there's a lot of things to do recreationally anywhere you go. But there are state forests around here, ocean recreation, recreation in the bay, and just a lot of very special places. But every area has a few places that are a little more special than others, and I pride myself in finding those. So the one I'll be recommending this week is Prime Hook National Wildlife Refuge.
Oh, Air 5. We didn't do the same one.
Nice. At more than 10,000 acres, this refuge is a beautiful space situated right alongside the Delaware Bay. The site is an important resting point for tens of thousands of migratory birds as they make their way up the Atlantic Flyway, which means at the right time of year, you can see more than 300 bird species, 51 species of fish, dozens of mammals, and a plethora of insects and plants in the unique salt marshes that are protected there. On top of all of that, the Fish and Wildlife Service hosts guided tours, including bird walks, that you can take and learn a little bit more about the wildlife that is native to the area. And you can learn more about those bird walks on their website. And in general, if you'd like to know more about the refuge, just visit fws.gov/prime_hook. And with that, what fun things are we going to do?
Well, our first stop is the Mispillion River Walk. Am I saying that right? Mispillion?
Oh, give me a second, because I'm pretty sure I have a recommendation. Yeah, Mispillion. Yeah, that's how I'd say it.
The park winds in and out of downtown Milford and is the largest municipal park in Delaware, which is not surprising because Delaware is but a speck.
And the big cities are packed.
Yes.
Dover, Wilmington, packed.
Packed. You can catch a music festival there in the summer, and during the holiday, you can catch this park lit up like the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
The holiday stroll highlights the shops and restaurants downtown and features Santa, a barbershop quartet, and hay rack rides.
Cool.
So then we're going to go to the Abbott's Mill Nature Center. This is 376 acres of park. It's full of trails and gardens, and it is also home to a historic working grist mill.
A grist mill.
The house that is located next to it is open for tours, so definitely check that out because you get to learn everything about why they used it, how they used it, how life was back in the day.
Okay.
Then I have the Parson Thorne Mansion. This was built in between 1730 and 1735. They have kept this true to its historic glory, basically, down to the lighting. This was also the home of Governor William Burton. And let me tell you, this man has lived everywhere.
William Burton's done a lot of things, too.
So, Gallery 37 will take you to what you will... I mean, you're going to find all of Delaware Native's work. You will find traditional... Oh, no, God, what am I doing? Delaware's local artists' work, paintings, prints, and home... God damn. Delaware's local artists' work, paintings, and prints, as well as handmade jewelry, are available. Milford is super cute. It's an artsy town, and you can find art everywhere. Bright, non-traditional colors fill the streets, murals on buildings, and tiny little boats decorated all around town. So keep your eyes peeled while driving through the streets of Milford. It's sure to be amazing.
Okay. So, Milford has quite a few delicious places to enjoy a home-cooked meal, but few are as unique as Sisters Caribbean. This place is literally as authentic as it gets for Haitian and other Caribbean cuisine, offering a staple dish of Haiti, oxtails, as well as goat stew, whole fried fish, and so very much more. The oxtails are mentioned so many times, and yeah. I don't know if they have a rather large Caribbean population in this area or what, but people rave about the oxtails.
So this is a literal ox tail?
It is, yes, it is the tail of an ox.
I bet that's like pure beef jerky.
It's, well, they take, to my understanding, when you make it, you take an ox's tail and you cut it's just going to be the part that's right before the butt.
Yeah.
And then you take that and it's like slow cooked.
Ooh.
So it's like ribs.
Okay.
But it's a lot cheaper to come by. Mm-hmm. That's why it was popular in Haiti, because it was far less expensive than actually getting ribs.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's I'm sure that's what the slave owners gave the slaves, because they're like, here, I don't want this.
Yeah, they probably got whatever was left of the ox after it had been butchered or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's apparently a very popular Haitian dish. I've heard of oxtails and never had it before. I'd never really seen it. It looked amazing.
Yeah.
It looked like Caribbean barbecue with, like, caramelized onions. Like, I don't know, fuck me up. It sounded great.
Any day.
To boot, they use age-old family recipes and secret seasonings that give it a truly authentic flavor. Many of the Google reviews mention the language barrier. So, like, these girls are from the Caribbean. Like,
hell yeah.
They're not just making Caribbean food. They are from there. Usually, I would recommend a place that offers food that's endemic to the area that we're visiting. But I really just felt like the opportunity to enjoy a unique meal from two sisters that came here from the Caribbean is one that you just can't pass up. So if you'd like to learn a little bit more about them, visit MilfordOxtails.com. That's their website. It's literally just Milford Oxtails.
You know, the best thing about a language barrier would be, like, if people wanted to do, like, their own thing, you'd be like...
Right, right. They wanted you to do something special to it.
Shrug, sorry, I don't speak English.
Basically, like, all the reviews were like, there's a language barrier, but they're... menu has a ton of pictures, so you can just point at what you want. Like,
yeah.
Even if you're not sure what it is, you're going to get a good picture of it. And nobody said that the thing they tried wasn't good. So it's not like,
it's not like
you're going to get surprised with something gross, because apparently everything there was good.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And now it's Beerapalooza time.
Oh, say, can you see by the Beerapalooza. What is it? Sky? Sight?
By the dawn's early light.
By the Beerapalooza's light.
Okay. That was great.
You know, I know the whole song, but, like, I'm, like, going back between, like, America the Beautiful. Wait, is that even a fucking song? Anyway, just ignore me, guys.
Please. It's fine.
Cut that out.
We're going to move forward. It's going to stay in.
Okay, perfect.
Founded in 2013, Mispillion River Brewing sets on Mullet Run Street just outside of town.
Mullet. Grass.
Like most breweries, they keep it light in reference to who they are, stating that their aim is to be the best brewery on Mullet Run Street. And they've achieved that because they're the only one.
Nailed it.
They seem like a really fun group of people, even making fun of their own grammar in their descriptions about themselves.
That's perfect.
So, it's fun stuff, but they use high-quality hops and barley to craft beers that are perfect, no matter your experience with craft beers. From the incredibly light wit beer, Wolowitz, which is perfect for beginners, to Not Today Satan IPA, which combines five kinds of hops in, quote, an unholy joining. And then they also offer beers like Seven Swords Golden Stout, which is I have never had a golden stout. So that's something, next time we are at a brewery, if they have one, I'm going to have to try that, because sounds really good. It's
We're gonna have to go to a stout heavy beer. A different brewery sometime.
Yeah, than just Tommyknockers every time.
Or Denver Beer Company.
Yeah. I want to go to Westbound and Down really bad. But anyway. Anyway, moving on. My point was, everyone's going to find a beer that they love here. And to boot, they have an amazing outdoor area to enjoy on a sunny day in Delaware while sipping on a beer. And they seem like a really fun crew with a ton of fun stuff going on. There's not a lot of other breweries in the area, so I feel like it's a great option. And if you would like to learn a little bit more about them, just check them out at MispillionRiverBrewing.com, and that is spelled MispillionRiverBrewing, RiverBrewing.com. And with that, we're going to get into the first story.
Get into it.
So this week, I am the one that picked out the murder, and we'll just get into it. I'll explain more later, but the title of the story is An Innocent Victim. Oof. Maricruz Sanchez was a 20-year-old stay-at-home mother of two. Her 3-year-old and 8-month-old children had been visiting their grandmother in Texas for about a month, and it was finally time for her to head down and bring them home to Milford. On March 31st, 2021, she spoke with her mother on the phone in the morning about coming to get the kids, and Nana, as she was known by her friends and family, decided to go and buy a ticket that day, and according to the plan, she would eventually fly out a few days later, pick up the kids, and head home. Now, the remainder of what happened on March 31st becomes a little bit blurred. From what I can gather, Nana was spending time with her friends, or according to some portions of the rumor mill, maybe a boyfriend. What she did that day, or anything that the people that she spent time with did, remains pretty much shrouded in mystery. I dug everywhere to find even a modicum of information about the hours leading up to 3:15 p.m. on March 31st of 2021, and there's just nothing. I threatened to not even do the story, because the information is so terribly sparse, given that it is still an active investigation. But after learning more about the events, I decided it was still an important story to tell. While we don't know exactly what happened during the day to precipitate what took place at 3:15, from that point forward, we do know what happened. Nana was driving down the Milford-Harrington Highway when a black SUV pulled up beside her. Now, mind you, this black SUV crossed the center yellow line and matched her speed to drive alongside her. Likely before Marigold even knew what was happening, shots rang out on the rural highway. Several shots, around a dozen from what I can gather, ripped through her vehicle, many of which hit the young mother in the upper torso. Her car veered off the highway through a ditch and then through a fence before coming to rest in a field. And the SUV sped off. A passerby saw the wrecked vehicle in the field and called police, assuming somebody had just lost control. When the Delaware State Patrol arrived to respond to what they believed was a single vehicle accident, they were shocked at what they found. Paramedics on scene removed Nana carefully from the car and rushed her to the local hospital. When her mother arrived from Texas late that night, like as soon as she got the call from the Delaware State Patrol, she drove 6 hours with the kids, got on a plane, and headed for Delaware. Oh. She was hit with the news from hospital staff that there was nothing that they were going to be able to do to save her. There was just too much damage to her internal organs. Oh, God. Marigold Sanchez would be pronounced dead 2 days later, on April 2nd, 2021, as a result of the injuries that she received from the gunshots. Marigold left behind her two children, her sister, and her mother, all wondering what happened that day on that lonely highway, and more specifically, why. Her mother said in an interview, I think mentally I've convinced myself I'm just mad she hasn't come to get her kids yet.
Mm.
So the investigation began. And this is where the waters get muddy again. Given that it's not a cold case, there is precious little information about what the police believe happened that day.
Right.
Her mother, and this is according to Facebook posts, vehemently believes. Vehemently?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know.
Something along those lines. That it was a random act by bloodthirsty monsters just wanting to kill somebody.
That's not really how that works.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Okay.
And of course, nothing can be ruled out. But the police certainly have different ideas. The working theories of law enforcement, at least as much as I can gather, and I'm qualifying a lot of my statements because I'm doing a ton of speculation here.
Right.
Because there is just so little. It's not even a year old case yet.
Yeah. It happened in March 2021.
Yeah. But from what I can tell, their theories revolve around mistaken identity or mistaken target.
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah. Now, this distinction is a fine one, but important. Either the killers were looking for a specific vehicle and believed that hers was that vehicle and simply shot without confirming their target, or her Marigold or her friends had been in the area of some unspecified event that happened earlier that day, and the killers believed that the individual they wanted to retaliate against was in her car.
But there was no one in the car.
I say this because every official police statement mentions that they believe the killing was in retaliation, quote, for an event that took place earlier in the day that Marigold was not involved in. Okay?
Okay.
If this is the case, then either her vehicle looked similar or exactly like a vehicle that the killers were hoping to catch on the road, or some person who Nana was affiliated with had done something to wrong these people, and for whatever reason, they believed that that person that they wanted to kill was in Nana's car.
Mm-hmm.
To my knowledge, she was not with anyone at the time of her murder. I've seen no police reports categorically stating that she was alone, but there's also absolutely nothing saying that there was anybody else in the car. I cannot find anything one way or the other.
Okay.
Obviously, that is a big part of the case, and it changes a lot if she was traveling with another person.
Right.
She was heading west, away from Milford, and away from her home.
Mm-hmm.
Not to the airport, because her flight wasn't for a couple more days. So the question begs, where was she going, and why was she going there? We also can't, of course, rule out that she was the victim of a random act of violence. But the aggression showed in the killings does not suggest that.
Yeah.
Generally, when someone attacks a stranger with a gun or otherwise, they aren't deeply committed to the act.
Well, that, and like, it's a, I don't know, like, it's not like I'm gonna drive by and shoot you.
Mm-hmm. And even, like I'm saying, even when it is, they tend to do it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
As the fact that the stranger can't identify them is important in their decision to attack a random stranger.
Right.
It needs to be done quickly so that they don't have a description of you and you can get away.
And she was in the black SUV?
No.
The shooter was.
The shooters were in a black SUV. A car
saw them but didn't know there were shots fired?
No. Traffic cameras down the road captured the black SUV as the only vehicle that passed after the shooting.
Okay, got it.
Heading the same direction.
Got it.
Okay?
Okay.
And again, in random acts of violence, rarely are the people who commit them even successful in killing the person that they're attacking. Because they're usually, like I said, they're not usually committed to murdering someone. There's another reason they've done it.
Right.
Whether it be to steal something or, you know, they're losing it because of drugs. Like, but it's never a fully committed. This was this appears to be something that was done with a great deal of commitment.
Yeah. And, like, she wasn't robbed.
No. There's nothing to suggest that they went to her vehicle after they shot at her.
Mm-hmm.
From everything we can tell, they just shot the shit out of that car and kept going.
I guess, like, maybe random act to, like, gang initiation, which that's still, like...
Still, usually that's going to be targeted against a rival gang, right. Not against random strangers.
But that's just, like, the only thing that I could, like, fathom.
I'm just saying there's not a lot that suggests that it would be a random act.
No, I agree.
This murder seems pointed. They discharged a large number of rounds into the vehicle. And again, this is speculation because the police have released so very little about the actual crime.
Mm-hmm.
But a statement made by Cindy Sylvia, Nana's mother, on Facebook indicated a dozen plus rounds, meaning that there was either a large capacity weapon involved or more than one shooter.
Yeah.
In either case, we know, and this is just a fact, drive-bys are almost never random.
Almost, yeah.
Now, the victims of drive-bys may be random, but it's not because they were actually targeted in the drive-by.
They're getting hit with, like...
Stray bullets.
Stray bullets.
Right.
Yeah.
Many people tend to think of a drive-by as random violence, but there's always a reason they're being committed. However absurd and petty those reasons are, there's always a reason.
And it's not for, like, unless it's a white man, it's usually not,
right.
Like, random, like you said.
Yeah. And even, I mean, I don't even know how many cases there are.
Of drive-bys?
Yeah, that the intended victim is not connected in some way,
right,
to either the shooters or somebody who has beef with the shooters or whatever, you know. Now, the actual victims may be completely random strangers caught by bullets because they didn't know a drive-by was about to happen, you know.
Right.
Usually, drive-bys are fast, with a handful of shots being fired and the perpetrators speeding off so as to not be caught. A lot of rounds were shot in this.
Right.
Like, this is...
Intentional.
Biggie Tupac number of rounds.
Yeah.
Involved here. Whoever shot, they shot with the absolute intention of killing the person in that car. And they wanted to make sure that whomever was in that car was dead. Now, we don't, like I said, police don't believe that Nana was the intended target.
Mm-hmm.
They think there must have been confusion or miscommunication or whatever going on there. But my point is that there's just not a lot about this that suggests that it's random. But these individuals stayed with Nana's car, shooting presumably until it veered off the road. And then they fled. They fired many rounds at her. And then they intended to make sure whoever was in that car was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make it clear that we obviously can't rule out random violence, but mistaken identity seems much more likely.
Yeah, it's just hard. Like, it's hard to think that, like, somebody that you love could be killed by random violence.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard and it's gross. Like, ugh.
And my kind of, just like from what I've read of the articles and stuff like that, like, there's not much out there about who Nana ran around with, like, who her friends were. Obviously, I, you know, did my own little internet sleuthing of her two Facebook pages. And, like, her friends don't seem any less out of the ordinary of, you know, anybody else's friends when they're in their 20s. You know what I mean? You know, we all did some stupid shit when we were in our 20s. Oh, my
God.
Yeah.
Oh, disgusting. I did so many stupid things.
But I have, like, a strong feeling that what the police think happened because they haven't categorically said, but what and I tend to agree with it, but I feel like what they think happened is that one of her friends may have been involved in some sort of gang violence,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily her, and maybe she was spending time with them, like hanging out. They were all kicking it somewhere when one of them decided to do some sketchy shit.
Or she like picked them up, or
at one point she went and picked them up from somebody's house, and somebody saw them get into her car, and they're like, "All right, that's the car." And maybe she dropped them off, and as terrifying and sad as it is, like her car became the target.
Ugh, God, you know, that's gross. Like obviously, it's not their car.
Well, right,
they're not driving it.
And I'm assuming they were thinking that they could get to her before this person was dropped off. And her leaving Milford, that's why I'm like, I would kill to know if she was with anybody.
Yeah.
Because if there was somebody else in the car that survived the shooting, then, like, were they the target?
Are they in hiding? Are they not talking?
Well, they've obviously talked to police.
Oh, you think they have?
I think after that wreck, I don't think they would have got out of that and just walked away. And because where this happened was kind of the middle of nowhere between Milford and the next town over.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you do? Walk through the fields in March on the, you know, Atlantic coast
mm-hmm.
back to the nearest town? Like, odds on, if they were in the car when it wrecked, they stayed there until police got there.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why. If there was somebody in the car, then that's why probably police are so certain that she was killed for something that she had no involvement in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that would make sense as to why they seem so certain in all of their statements that she was an innocent victim who was killed for something that took place earlier in the day that she had no involvement in.
Right.
Because, like, otherwise, why do they keep saying that?
Right.
Somebody has spoken to them and told them why mm-hmm. she was targeted.
Yeah.
We just don't know yet. But in the end, we don't know who killed Marigold Sanchez, leaving her children without a mother and a hole in the hearts of the family. All we know is that they were driving a dark-colored SUV. And we'll post the picture on the Facebook page and Instagram. And while police have not mentioned any model, my own internet sleuthing is that it was a dark gray or light black colored Nissan Rogue, probably 2019 or 2020, because the profile of it matches a Rogue almost perfectly, especially like the back, that little like triangle window right behind the back door. It's like the exact same shape as a Rogue. And just the body, all that. The monsters who killed Marigold are still on the loose, and I'm sure somebody knows something. Nana was an innocent victim. Murder for something that she did not have any part in. And her family deserves to see justice carried out. And while putting the people responsible for her death behind bars won't bring her back... And while putting the people responsible for her death won't bring back this young, vibrant mother of two... Knowing that the person or people responsible for this crime can never hurt anyone again is just a little bit of comfort that I feel like they should be able to feel.
I absolutely agree.
So obviously there's a lot of questions still involved in this case. And if you know absolutely anything, no matter how insignificant, you can tip anonymously via Delaware Crime Stoppers at 1-800-TIP-333. Or on Delaware.CrimeStoppersWeb.com. So with that, we're going to take a quick break and head to the next story.
On to the next one.
All right, so we are back from the break. I hope you got yourself a fresh...
Nice. You gotta keep that one in.
I hope you got yourself a fresh beer, because Laken did, and I forgot, so I'm gonna go do that right now.
You're so irresponsible.
So now I've got a fresh beer, too, and Laken's going to entrance us with the next tale.
Guys, mine's a lot lighter. I titled this The Mysteries of Woodburn Mansion. The mansion was built in 1790 and is one of the best examples of Georgian architecture in the state of Delaware. It has been the home to a lot of high society members of the state, senators, politicians, wealthy farmers, and doctors. It was bought by the state of Delaware in 1965 to become the official governor's home.
Okay.
It was then renovated to a more modern style. Some say the yard of the mansion looks haunting, surrounded by trees that make it look, quote, scary, but I have to disagree. I think it looks amazing. One thing that everyone can agree on, however, is, and including the former tenants of the old house, is that a few of the residents never left.
Okay.
Daniel Cowgill was a Quaker who owned the Woodburn and was running a stop on the Underground Railroad. Bless the Quakers, except for William Penn's kids.
Fuck them.
Unblessed. Sorry. The slaves would rest in the basement by day and were taken to the nearby river where they would begin their journey again on boats. One night, a group of slave raiders came to the old house and Daniel had to take action. He chased off the group of raiders, but one ran up a tree to hide. He slipped on his way up and caught his head in a hole of the tree and accidentally hung himself.
Oh, shit.
Snapped his neck. Now when you step outside the old mansion, you can hear the sounds of the man's chains he was going to use on the slaves clanging loudly.
I thought you were going to say his neck snapping. I was like, that's morbid.
Ew, God, no. Maybe. It's a tree snapping. Stop. Ew.
That was a neck snap.
And occasionally you can hear him moaning, curse the live through his death over and over forever. You can also see him occasionally hanging from the tree.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. One of the earliest reported ghost stories was in the 1820s. Dr. M.W. Bates and his wife lived in the mansion at the time. One night, they had a guest stay, Lorenzo Dow, a well-known preacher of the time who was passing through, visiting churches in the area. Lorenzo came down for breakfast the next morning, and the Bates family asked him to pray over their breakfast. Lorenzo looked puzzled and then asked, "Should we wait for the other guest?" The Bates looked at each other with a puzzled look on their faces. "We haven't any other guests, Mr. Dow," Mrs. Bates said. "Well, I met an older fellow on the staircase as I was walking to my room last night. He came into my room almost as if he was checking on me multiple times. Are you sure you haven't another guest here, Mrs. Bates?" The Bates once again shared a glance. Mr. Bates replied, "That would be my father. He has long since passed. He enjoys checking on the mansion from time to time."
This was Bates Motel before it was cool.
Yeah. But a lot less mother loving.
You're right.
Yeah. That night, Lorenzo Dow found a different house to stay in. The dining room is a hot spot for activity as well. Often sounds can be heard in there, almost like scampering.
Okay.
A few governor's wives have been A few governor's wives have seen A few governor's wives have seen revolutionary era men standing around in their traditional clothing, floating. Almost like they were in an important meeting.
Ooh.
One of the former owners filled a decanter full of wine every night to find it completely empty by morning.
Ooh, schnitzel.
Governor Charles Terry Jr. said he awoke to some noises in the dining room, clinking of glasses and someone walking around, so he jumped up to investigate the sound. He marched downstairs, fully prepared to take on an intruder, when he saw a man helping himself to his wine collection.
Rude.
Governor Terry rubbed his eyes. The man was there, but he wasn't. He was translucent, with a white powdered wig, but he sure was enjoying the wine the governor had to offer.
Well, can you blame him?
No, I...
I'll bet the governor's wine is the best wine. I bet Governor Polis has some dope wine.
Wine. Wink.
Wink, wink.
The ghost is believed to be the builder of the Woodburn, Mr. Hilliard. Historians say that Mr. Hilliard loved a strong drink. After multiple people witnessed the man drinking wine, someone got a good look at his face. After doing a little research, they found the picture of Mr. Hilliard, and it was a match. As an experiment, a glass of wine was left out overnight, and when they came to investigate the next morning, the wine had been drank. I suppose Mr. Hilliard wanted to stand around and admire his work with just a stiff drink.
Maybe.
Former governor's wife, Jeanne Tribbett, did her own little experiment. She placed a glass of wine out to test the theory one night. She didn't inform her husband because she thought he would tease her by drinking the wine. To her disappointment and a little relief, the wine went untouched.
Sad.
Yeah. At an inauguration party, guests noticed that someone was tugging on their pants and skirts. Later, they saw the apparition of a little girl standing in the corner. The little girl is most often seen in the garden, wearing a red checkered dress.
So is this, I probably missed this, but is this the governor's mansion now?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't actually know if it still is.
But it was for a period.
For a long time, yes.
Okay.
Another strange occurrence happened. Oh no, shit, I didn't get to finish that. She loves to play and splash in the pool, so the little girl ghost likes to run around and chill in the garden.
Okay.
As little kids do.
Right.
Another strange occurrence happened when one of the former governors invited a teacher and a few of her students to stay in the 7-bedroom mansion. Students noticed an eerie painting on the bathroom wall that seemed to smile at them when they passed.
Okay.
It's hard to say why some of the spirits stayed in the mansion, but one thing everyone says is that all the ghosts are super friendly and they don't feel threatened. Guy hanging in a tree. He stuck there.
Well, he deserved it.
Yeah. Well, wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can check out the Woodburn Mansion. You can check out the Woodburn Manor when you're in the Milford area. It's about 20 miles outside of the town. To schedule a tour and see how haunted it is for yourself, contact Corey Marshall Steele at 302-739-5656. Or via email at corey.Marshall@state.de.us.
So it still is owned by the state, at least, but I'm gathering it must not be the governor's mansion anymore.
I don't think it is.
Right.
But it is kind of cool, especially because, like, what's-his-face live in, like, at least three houses, if not more.
Yeah. That is pretty cool.
Yeah. Also, the Quaker helping the slaves.
The Quakers.
The refugees.
The Quakers were always at the front lines of the abolition movement, like.
I know, I just love it.
They were never for it in the first place, like. Because I'm pretty sure the Quakers wanted to outlaw slavery in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But there's something happened that they couldn't. Like some legal reason why they weren't allowed to. I don't know, but.
Because this is America. You Quakers.
That was a good story. I like that. That was interesting.
Thank you. Yours was really good. Super sad.
It was, yeah. It was rather sad. But it was a good one. So. So just to give you guys a heads up, we're going to be like slamming out some episodes in the next week. We're not going to be actually dropping them, but we're going to be recording a bunch. So for the next couple of weeks, you're probably not going to hear any real updates about our lives, because not much will have changed in the handful of days between when we record this and the next one we're going to record will be like Sunday or Monday.
Hopefully.
Hopefully
nothing new happens in our lives.
Nothing drastic, at least. I mean, I hope new things happen. I like new things, but hopefully nothing drastic happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to try to get back on our recording schedule the way we should, because, again, we're recording on Wednesday night, and this releases Friday, so I've got a long night ahead of me tomorrow night, and I've got a shitload of math to do, and fuck math, so...
Hashtag fuck math.
Hashtag fuck math. Anyway. Milford is pretty far off of any of the interstates in Delaware. Not that there's a ton of interstates that go through Delaware. Mainly Wilmington, which is part of the Eastern Seaboard Super City. So, not a whole lot of interstates to cross the great state of Delaware. But when you are down there, I am certainly going to meet some wonderful people.
And I'm sure you're going to eat some delicious food.
And you're probably going to find some great beer.
And you know, you're going to go kayaking.
And hopefully.
These are the places you'll go.